A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, hello, hello. This episode is sponsored by iTalkie, an ideal service to sponsor episodes of this podcast because it fits in really well with your lifestyle for learning English. You can listen to my episodes, pick up a few expressions, keep brushing up on your English, and then with your teacher or language partner on iTalkie, you can activate everything, producing as much spoken English as you can to make sure that the input that you get from the podcast turns into genuine spoken output of English. And if you keep an organized record of the things that you've learned and revise a bit here and there while continuing to listen to the podcast and having your iTalkie sessions, it's a recipe for success in English. Check out teacherluke.co.uk/talk for more information about iTalkie. And when you buy some talking time, they will send you a voucher worth a free lesson. So teacherluke.co.uk/talk or click an iTalkie logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Luke's English Podcast. And this episode is all about becoming a dad. Now, if you've heard the podcast recently, you'll know that my wife and I are expecting a child. And you might be thinking, expecting a child to do what, Luke? Well, expecting a child to be born. We're having a baby. Well, she's having a baby. As I have said before, I will mainly just be standing there hoping for the best. But my wife is having a baby, and expecting a child is just the phrase that we use for that when you're going to have a baby. So we're going to have a baby daughter in December. Thank you very much if you have sent me messages saying congratulations. That's very nice of you. I've had a few messages like that. So if you have got in touch with me to say congrats, then thank you very much. That's very nice of you. Now, I don't plan to talk about children all the time on this podcast. Having a child is a big deal, but I don't want to sound like a broken record by going on about it all the time. Although it's bound to come up. It's bound to come into the things I say because it will be a major part of my life, of course. But I thought that it would be worth talking about it in some depth in at least one or two episodes because it's something that a lot of people experience. And many of you will have had children or will go on to have children. If not you, then your friends or family, or at least it's the sort of thing that people do talk about a lot. And since this is happening to me, I think talking about it could bring some authenticity to the episode, and that can make it a bit more interesting and therefore more engaging for you to listen to. Also, there's quite a lot of specific vocabulary that will come up that you can learn. So I did record a conversation with Amber nearly 4 years ago when she was pregnant with her son Hugo. And we talked about what it was like for her to be pregnant. And I did a follow-up episode with vocabulary of the subject too. You can find those two episodes in the archive, episodes 161 and 162. That was quite a long time ago. So let's revisit the subject and see if any of the same language comes up again. This time, I thought I would talk to Andy Johnson and Ben Butler about their experiences of becoming parents to see if they can give me some general advice as I'm just about to become a dad for the first time. They've both had several children now, so they're very experienced at that sort of thing. And, you know, they know all about the kinds of things I'll be going through in a matter of weeks now, because the birth is just a few weeks away. So I'm going to do a lot of listening in this episode and lots of learning. And you can join me too. Let's see how much we can learn from this. So watch out for some nice language relating to the whole subject of children, parenting, and so on. This episode is in two parts. That's because I've decided to spend the second half of each episode explaining some of the vocabulary that comes up in the conversation. So what's going to happen is that I'll play you the first half of the conversation in a moment. You can just try to follow it. Now, I think it might be difficult for some of you. I think that there could be quite a lot of detail in this conversation that you won't catch, honestly. There are three of us talking on Skype fairly quickly about quite a specific and detailed subject. So remember, if you don't understand all of it, then you should keep listening and hold on, because I will be going through a lot of the language and clarifying it afterwards. And even after you've heard me clarify some stuff, you could go back and listen to the conversation again. You might be surprised at how much more you understand the second time round. And that should help you to understand more and also turn this into more than just a conversation. It will become an English lesson and a chance to learn some natural English expressions. So don't worry if you don't understand all of it. I expect to catch a lot of that stuff in the second half. There's also a vocabulary list on the page for this episode and the next one too. Now, having children is wonderful and fantastic and all that, but it can also be quite scary. I mean, it's fairly serious business, especially the moment of the birth. I think we're going to get into some fairly personal details in this conversation, and there will probably be a few descriptions of childbirth experiences which were quite emotional and even frightening at the time. So please just bear that in mind if this is a sensitive topic for you for any reason. Another thing I'm aware of is the fact that there are various cultural differences around childbirth. And so the things that you'll hear in this conversation might be different to how it is in your country. I'm quite curious to read your comments and to know if things are done at all differently where you are from. Anyway, let's now talk to Andy and Ben and see what they can tell me about becoming a dad. And by the way, the conversation was recorded on Skype. I was at home in Paris and they were in a classroom at the London School of English, which is just next door to where I used to live in my flat in London. I used to work at the London School of English. That's how I know Ben and Andy. We're former colleagues. And in fact, from that school, some of the classrooms have a view of my old flat through the windows. So you can sit in some of those rooms and actually see my old flat. In fact, that is the first thing that's mentioned in this conversation, as Andy and Ben are sitting in one of the rooms overlooking my apartment in London. Okay, so without any further ado then, let's jump into the conversation, and here we go. Hi guys, how are you today?
Very good, thanks. How are you, Luke?
Very good too, thanks. So where are you, actually?
We are in Westcroft Square, where you used to work. In fact, if we look out the window, we can see your London flat.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it's on fire.
Yeah.
There is some smoke, actually.
Yeah.
Is there
I'm not joking, there's genuinely some smoke coming out the building, but oh, I don't...
Really?
Don't panic, it's
don't
okay.
Panic.
Okay, it's fine. Yeah, I'm sure just part of the building's on fire, it's probably fine.
Yeah, nothing. We're in classroom 1.3. I don't know if you can cast your mind back to that room.
Classroom.
Front of the building.
Classroom 1.3 on the first floor.
That's it. It's one of the bigger classrooms.
I don't remember, I'll be honest. I remember the numbers. I don't know which one 1.3 is. Is it in the left-hand corner?
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, it's the one that looks out onto your building.
So, okay, it's on the ground floor. The first one on the left.
I think so.
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, good times.
Good times.
Yeah, good times.
I'm sure you had some great classes in there, Luke. Oh, in here, actually, should I say.
Yeah, yeah. Probably had some...
And some bad ones as well.
Probably some bad ones too, as well.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about becoming a dad. That's the idea, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we heard your news. Many congratulations, by the way.
Thanks very much.
Absolutely.
Yeah it's exciting and slightly nerve-wracking because, you know, it's a journey.
And tiring. You'll see.
So what people keep telling me things like this, you know, I'm getting sort of various different types of message. Like some people tell me when I tell them that I'm going to become a dad, you know, the different reactions that I get. Some people sort of say, oh, that's fantastic. Oh, you're going to love it. You know, it's going to be brilliant. It's the best experience of your life, blah, blah, blah. Other people are like, ooh, you know, and then they say other sort of slightly more negative things like, oh, you're not going to sleep anymore or, you know, other things. So it's a mix. I'm going to try and find out from you what it's really like.
All right.
Okay.
That's the idea. So can we start just, could you start by just telling us how many kids you've got now?
How qualified we are. Well, Ben?
I've got two boys, actually. One is four. He's just started school.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is going to be two in January. So he's 21 months or something like that at the moment.
Four, two in Jan. Okay.
And I've also got two boys. One of them is going to be three at the end of this month, which is October, as we're speaking now. And the other one is 4 months old on Sunday. Yeah.
Ah.
So he's a little one. He was only born in June this year.
I see. Okay. So, Ben, you were first.
Yeah.
With your four-year-old that 4 years ago. And then Andy, you came the year after you had yours.
I equalised. Yeah.
So it's 1-1 at that point.
And then Ben took the lead again.
Ben took the lead again 2 years ago. And then more recently, you drew level again with another one, Andy.
Yeah. We're both on a hat trick, though, but I think it's more likely that the match has been abandoned now.
Is that it, then? No more kids now?
Yeah. Full time.
That's it, full time.
Match abandoned in inclement weather, I think.
So what's the reason? Like, no more kids then? So what? Why not?
Tired.
Yeah.
I think two's just a bit mad, really. I think, you know, one is difficult. It's a challenge. I mean, it's fun with one. It's fun with two. It's fun with three, four, five, six, seven, I'm sure. But I think it's just, for us, we haven't had that conversation yet, but we're still kind of still like emerging from the shell shock of having a second one. And, you know, all the sleepless nights that go with that. But I think we're probably going to just call it quits at two. And, you know, we've been very lucky to get this far.
Okay. Yeah, I see. All right, then. So, I mean, what should I be feeling at this moment then, guys? My baby is due to arrive in about 2 months. So what should I be feeling and thinking at this moment?
In terms of should, I don't know. Maybe you should tell us what you are feeling at this moment.
Yeah.
And then we can sort of advise you if that's right or not. I don't know.
Well, I mean like... I'm feeling a mixture of different things. So I'm feeling sort of excited at the prospect of having my own child. I know that sounds weird, but you know, like of extending the family and like having a child that my wife and I will have produced. And it's just it's weird. I think
it's
really weird. That's the first thing. Like, it's really hard to kind of get your head around it. Because it's just like you realize that, every day I see my wife's belly growing as the baby grows, and, you know, you feel the baby moving and you can feel it kicking, and sometimes you even see the belly moving and things like this, and you think, well, this is so strange. There's like a thing growing inside my wife and it's like an alien or something. But at the same time, you realize that this is made of our DNA. It's like a combination of the two of us. And we don't know what she's going to be like. I mean, you know, the scans and everything tell us that she's healthy and that she's fine and stuff like that. But it's just so strange, like, that this third person is going to arrive on the scene. And, like, where's she come from, you know? Like, it's like a person. Like, where has it come from? It's really weird.
You know, it is, and you ask us, you know, how what you should be feeling, and I think it almost works the other way, because I genuinely can't really remember what it was like before I had kids. I can't remember what it was like going through what you're going through now. All I remember about that period was thinking, I don't know anything, and it was little things like, how am I going to change a nappy? How am I going to do that? And, you know, those kinds of things are really, really easy to do in hindsight. But at the time, that's that was the kind of thing that I was worried about, and trying to understand more about the process of, you know, going. I think you focus just on the birth more than anything, you know, the hospital side
of
things.
Yeah, I agree. And there was quite a lot of apprehension, I remember, around that, for me anyway, you know, just being worried about being there, getting there on time, making sure it was all right. We had nothing too serious, but a couple of minor issues in the pregnancy, which sort of led us to be a bit more apprehensive than we would normally have been, maybe. And I remember this sort of a sort of feeling of sort of wonder as well. You said it was weird, but that sort of manifested itself in sort of a feeling of wonder for me. Like, you know, what's this thing going to be like, and how is it going to turn out, really? You know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I guess saying weird sounds a bit negative. I mean, it is wonder.
It is weird, I agree, but...
It's both. When I say weird, I mean it's just like this thing that's hard to really understand. And yeah, I guess it is a sense of wonder, of like thinking, how on earth has this even happened? I can understand why people say it's a miracle. I mean, I'm not going to go as far as to say it's a miracle, but it certainly seems sort of magical or something in a way, doesn't it? When you realise that this person is just arriving out of nowhere, so that's odd. But yeah, so first of all, that feeling of weirdness, and then secondly, yeah, there are fears and there are excitements. The fears are for me about things like, you know, the health side of things, like just mainly hoping that the baby will be healthy. Because you never know, do you? And you don't know how the birth will go. So I hope that the baby will be healthy. And also, of course, I hope that my wife is going to be fine. Because, I mean, I'm putting myself in her shoes. It's very hard to imagine what it's like, first of all, to be pregnant if you're a man. We can't really imagine it.
Can't imagine it at all. You've got something in you. It's just...
something that's not you, that's kind of growing. It's so weird. And also, it... if I was her, I would probably start to get a little scared sometimes about the birth. I mean, she seems to be handling it really well, and she's kind of cool-headed and stuff. But if I was her, I think that sometimes I would freak out a little bit, and I'd be thinking, oh, God, before any big thing happens, like if it's an exam or a job interview or some big moment, you start to get really nervous about it when you think about it. So something like childbirth, which, you know, is such a big deal physically, you know, as well as all the kind of the emotional attachments to it, but just the physical side of just giving birth. It's quite scary in a way. So
it's a big deal, yeah. Are you guys doing classes to prepare you?
Yeah, we've just started doing classes.
Prepare you.
That's interesting because it's in French. So there's an extra layer of what's the word for it? Not trauma. That's too strong.
Confusion.
Yeah, an extra layer of nerves added to that, where we're sitting around in a birthing class with a couple of other French couples, and the midwife is talking about all of it in French, and she's doing diagrams, drawing diagrams and things, and she's got like a little baby doll, you know, that she's using as demonstration. And my French isn't still not really good enough to be able to understand every single thing. And in that situation, you want to understand every single thing, right?
And completely.
It's having to translate things to you.
She translates afterwards. So yesterday we went to a birthing class, and like the other couples didn't know that I was not French, you know. I mean, she asked us to do introductions, and just by chance, I was the last person to introduce myself. And I think by that point, everyone just couldn't be bothered. You know, they weren't interested. It was like, you know, each person introduced themselves, and it got to me, and I was like, I'm Luke. Fine. What they said. You know, basically, like, it's not important. I'm Luke, and I'm the husband. Yeah, next.
Yeah, and everyone had switched off at that point.
Yeah, everyone had switched off, and all the women had introduced themselves. So I was just the last guy in the list, and I was the man. So it was like, well, we don't really care, you know. So I didn't do a lot of speaking, so people didn't really notice. And then I sat there for an hour and a half, just looking at the midwife and understanding, I don't know, 40%. Of what she was saying, 45% of what she was saying, and that other, you know, 55 to 60%, that's quite important stuff. So inside, I was just kind of like, you know, I mean, I'm very used to that situation where everyone's speaking French and I'm not understanding it all. I'm very used to it now. And what happens is that your head starts spinning. And the first 25 minutes, I can keep up. But then after that, then I just lose all perspective and I'm just spinning in space at that point. So it got a bit like that. So that was embarrassing. But my wife is very good and she kind of explains it all to me afterwards. I'm like a child who needs things to be explained to, you know.
Yeah. So are you having a birthing plan? Do you have those in France? It's the idea that you have certain choices about what you want, you know, whether you want to have a cesarean section or whether you want to have a water birth or anything like that, what kind of pain medication you like.
How many drugs you want to consume, use.
So in theory, you should kind of go with that and present it. At least in the UK, you go in and they say, this is my birthing plan. Can you please try and follow it as much as you can? They try and give as much control as you can. But I think the fact is that for most first-time parents, you're just like, whatever you say is the right thing to do, we will do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be honest, in my experience, the plan goes out the window in 5 minutes anyway, to be honest. You make a plan and something happens. You can't follow the plan. And you just got to go with the flow, really.
when we had our first, we had a bit of a complication in the delivery room. Which meant that the whole room filled with doctors and there's about 15 people in the room. And it got to the point where it was pretty much the next push and the baby was going to be born. And I was like, oh, just before we start, everyone, it's really important that the first, for in our birthing plan, it's really important for us that the first voice our son or daughter hears is mum's voice. So can you all be really quiet? And my wife just went, oh, that doesn't matter anymore. Just get it out.
Right. Yeah. Well, in France, it's a little different. And I don't think that they have given us a portfolio in which we can write down our birthing plan, which we then give to the doctors. I think it's basically, I mean, we've met the people at the hospital and it's, you know, the options are basically, do you want a natural birth? Or not, and we don't want a natural birth. We've just chosen not to have one, and then beyond that, it's kind of up to the way that they just do it in that particular hospital. I think so.
Will it be a C-section?
That's not planned. No.
When you say not a natural birth, what do you mean?
Oh, and when I say natural birth here, that means a birth where they don't give you a lot of medication. They don't give painkillers. So
isn't an epidural a standard in France?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So yeah. Epidural, which is the sort of, would you say it's a painkiller?
Yeah. The one that goes into your spine and it blocks.
Yeah.
It's like a nerve blocker. It goes directly into a spine, basically.
Yeah. My wife had almost no pain relief for the first pregnancy, but the second one she had an epidural and she said it was just a game changer. It just made it so easy.
Why didn't she have pain relief for the first one?
A couple of reasons. I mean, it was a very long labor, but we conceived on Valentine's Day because we went through IVF, so we know exactly when it happened because it was quite a kind of a medical procedure.
Yeah.
And we think that because of that, by the time it got round to our delivery date, it was just really busy because so many other people conceived at that time of the year. The most romantic night of the year.
It must be a popular day to conceive.
So it was really, really busy. And so they basically ran out of gas and air and pain relief. And so she basically went through about 18 hours of labor with no pain relief. No pain relief.
Mm.
Yeah. And then it was time to go. But the second one was much more, we were induced and it was much more painful. So they give you chemicals to bring the baby out. I guess that's what we're talking about when we talk about a natural birth. And I know, I don't know if your wife is going to listen to this, but and I know we're giving you advice, but if it's, I think that my wife would certainly advocate having an epidural. Because it makes things so much easier.
Yeah, I mean, I've spoken to lots of women who've had babies, or just women in general, who talk about how they wanted, or at least want to have a birth without an epidural, because they believe that it's just healthier and better. For example, they don't like the idea of the baby being under the influence of a pain blocker, you know, when they're born, because they don't like the idea of their baby coming into the world in this kind of chemical induced state. This sort of numb state, right? Because it affects not affect the child as well? I think it does, doesn't it? Or does it?
It didn't with us. I'm not sure it does. I think it depends when it's given and how it's given. I'm not entirely sure, but and I think that those are all good ways to look at it. But I suppose my advice would be, you know, there's no shame in having something like that, because my wife certainly didn't intend to take an epidural for the second, but the pain was just so bad that she just couldn't cope. And I've never seen her like that before, because my wife is pretty hardcore. She's hard as nails. And so for her to say, "I really need help, I really need an epidural," I was like, wow, she's seriously in pain. Yeah. So I think that's what it means. I mean, it's just like, all I would say is there's no shame in accepting that you need help.
Yeah. Well, my wife's already said, you know, I don't care. Just give me, she's like, I want the epidural. There's no question about it. I think for some people, there's a preconception, or there are preconceptions about the whole idea of childbirth. I mean, for me, the main thing is that I think that, you know, the mother or the would-be mother, the woman should be the one to choose how she wants it done, and that it's completely very important that she is comfortable, and that that basically she should feel comfortable, and that she should feel in control a bit. I mean, she can't really have total control over the situation, but you know that we should basically follow what she wants to do. And if, like, for some women, they would feel more comfortable doing it at home, they don't want to be in the sort of a medical environment. In this sort of sanitized environment, some women just don't like that association. So if that would make a woman sort of freak out, then, you know, I understand why she wouldn't want that. But my wife is totally fine about doing it in hospital. She wants to do it in a hospital. She wants to have all the medical people around. She wants to have an epidural because she says that she doesn't have the pain tolerance. And that I don't think she feels it as a question of pride that she needs to do it without. You know, she's got no qualms about that. And she's quite happy to just have the epidural and not have to have this what must be an intensely painful experience.
I wonder if as many people would choose to go through it if they knew exactly how painful it was.
They wouldn't
I've got having said that, both of our partners have gone through it again. I think you forget.
Yeah.
I've got a friend here who had a baby a few years ago, and she, before the birth, she was saying, I'm going to have what they call a natural birth here, which means birth without an epidural. Mm. She was like, I'm going to have a natural birth. I'm going to have an epidural-free birth, because she believed in the concept of it. And apparently for her, she got to the point of labor and she was like, give me an epidural. You know, she changed her mind fairly quickly when she realized what it really felt like.
I think that's very common. I think a lot of women must go through that experience, I think. But actually, it's interesting because a natural birth here is a natural delivery, and a non-natural birth would be a cesarean section.
Oh, okay.
Where they cut it out of the female's body.
Yeah, so, that's right. There's an operation to cut open the uterus and
that's right,
get the baby out in that way. Yeah. Well, no, I guess you can choose to have that if you want. It depends on the hospital, I think, here. It does actually depend on the hospital. Some hospitals just don't give you the option, and others, like, for example, private hospitals, would give you the option. But we're going to a public hospital, and I think it's just standard practice for them to try and do it the normal way with an epidural. And if there are complications, then the cesarean can be done. But I think that's not the plan, and we're not going to go for that unless it's absolutely necessary. So, all right, there's so many things to say about this, and really I want to kind of get some experience from you. I want to kind of learn a few things from you. So, I mean, what should we do? Should we talk about the pregnancies that you've experienced? Well, you were going to ask me how we discovered that my wife was pregnant, weren't you? I think that was one of the questions.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's one of our questions.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, we were sort of quite surprised, I think, to have conceived quite quickly, because we were quite, I don't know, surprised, or if we felt lucky that it wasn't a long drawn out process. Because for some people, you know, it takes quite a long time, and it can be, you know, it can be quite difficult when you're trying to have a baby and it takes a long time, and you don't, like, you know, several friends of mine have had to wait a long time before getting pregnant. And I thought, well, I'm let's see, when we were trying, I was 39. I was thinking, I'm not old. I'm not, you know, I'm not that old, but still, I'm not as young as I used to be. And I wondered if that would be a factor. But literally, we started trying, and about 10 days later, my wife decided she would check using a pregnancy test. She bought a few pregnancy tests and she checked, and she like showed me the test. And the way that this particular test worked was that if you're pregnant, there's a line, okay? So you kind of, I guess, it tests the urine. And if the woman is pregnant, there's a line. And the diagram on the back of the box shows the different possibilities. And basically, it's like, it could be a really clear line, it could be a vague line, and it could be a very vague line. And any of those things means pregnant. And if there's nothing at all, then it's not pregnant.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah.
So my wife showed me the test. She was like, "What? Can you see a line on this thing?" And
I was like, "A vague line."
And I was like, "I can't. There's a vague line. It's not a clear." And she's like, "But you know, I'm not sure. It's not very clear." I was like, "Yeah, it's vague. It's a vague line." And you know, and she wasn't convinced. And I was like, "No, you're pregnant. That's a vague line. You're definitely pregnant." And there was like a period where I was convinced she was pregnant and she wasn't. And I was like, "No, that's it. You're pregnant. You know, take another test if you want, but there's no doubt you're definitely pregnant." And so she was sort of in denial or couldn't believe it or needed more verification. But I was already convinced. I was like, "No, we're going to have a baby. You're pregnant." And so she went out and bought a couple of other tests and took them. And they, you know, like different ones that used a different system, they all showed the same thing. She was pregnant. And we were like, "What the? You're pregnant already?" Like, I thought it was going to be a lot more complicated than that. And so that was pretty quick.
It was quite similar for me with my first. It didn't take very long at all. And actually, I was a bit disappointed because I was getting quite a lot of action. the door was suddenly closed on me.
Yeah. That's what I should have said. I should have said, I don't think you are. And, you know, those pregnancy tests are a bit expensive. Let's just keep trying for another few weeks. So that happened pretty quickly. And then, you know, then we started on this crazy train.
Yeah, and there's no getting off, so that's it now.
But we were the opposite because I'm not going to talk about my health issues again on the podcast because I've done that at great length in the past. But we never really thought we were going to be able to have kids, and then we fell pregnant about in 2011, and that was a real shock, a real surprise. But we unfortunately had a miscarriage, but then we thought, well, it can happen. So we started trying. We tried for 3 years and never fell pregnant again. And in the end, we went through IVF. And
so, sorry, what is IVF? Because my listeners might not know what IVF is.
IVF it's basically assisted conception. So is it intravenous fertilization?
In vitro, isn't it? In vitro
yeah. Fertility treatment, I think is the phrase.
So it's
I should know, it's
a form of assisted conception.
Essentially, what they do is they take the eggs out and inseminate them in a test tube, if you like, and then they go back in. So it's quite a scientific approach to conception, and it's got a quite a, it's maybe a 25% success rate.
Mm-hmm.
So we went through this whole process, and then so we'd been in the hospital, we'd had the eggs taken out, and we had something like 7 healthy eggs, and then they had to put my bit together with Natasha's bit, sorry, my wife's bit, and then put it back into my wife, and then we had to wait for a few days to see whether it was successful.
Talk about taking the fun out of it.
Well, exactly. And I remember we had to take a test on a Sunday, and we went over to see some friends for dinner on the Saturday night. And we obviously didn't tell anybody that we were going through this. And so our friends had like got champagne. So they were plying us with champagne, and Natasha just kept pouring her glass into mine, and I got so drunk because she couldn't drink, and I, but we were kind of hiding it from everybody. And so the next morning, the day that we had to take the test, I had such a bad headache from all the champagne. At 5 a.m. Natasha wakes me up. She goes, right, let's go and do a test. I was like, oh really? I feel awful. I remember being in our little bathroom and taking the test and just waiting for that line, vague line or whatever line,
yeah,
to appear. I think it takes 3 minutes, and it's, yeah, the longest 3 minutes of your life. When you've been trying for 3 years, you'd think waiting another 3 minutes isn't going to be that difficult, but it just seemed to go on forever. But yeah, so fortunately for us, you know, that was how we fell pregnant. But then when we had our second, I mean, I don't even remember having sex. That one, it just popped up, you know, fell pregnant. You know, I'm serious.
Wait, you don't remember having sex, Andy?
Maybe it wasn't yours, Andy.
And we must have done, but you know, it was a complete surprise. We, you know, it just happened naturally and quite quickly. So yeah, so we've had both ends of the spectrum. We've had waiting a long time, and then we've had one just happen immediately like that.
Yeah, right, okay, cool. Did your wives have morning sickness? Did they get sick?
Mine didn't really have sickness, but for the first term, they divide pregnancies into terms. So it's like you've got 3 terms in a pregnancy. So it's sort of, I don't know, 12, 13 weeks, something like that.
It's the first trimester, isn't it, where they get sick?
She was just narcoleptic. She was just coming home from work, lying on the sofa about 5:30, and she'd be fast asleep by 7. Yeah. And sleep at night and wake up and go to work again. So for me, it was a little bit boring at that time, because sort of sitting there on my own, like, you know, I've got a pregnant wife, and, you know, yeah.
She was narcoleptic. She kept falling asleep.
Just falling asleep constantly. She just needed to sleep a lot. Her body just like was obviously generating new cells or whatever, and it took it out of her.
Yeah, Natasha was the same, you know. I don't remember much morning sickness with either of them. In fact, she didn't have morning sickness with either of them, but definitely a lot of tiredness and sleeping. But then, you know, she's quite lazy anyway, so she's still it's like that anyway.
It's a good excuse, isn't it? I can't do the washing out, I'm so tired. Yeah, okay.
right.
I don't think we've ever watched a film. Like, she's before kids, after kids, she can never watch film. She always falls asleep. Like, I remember before we had kids, she told me that she'd never seen Star Wars, and I couldn't believe it. So sat down, you know, had dinner, we you know, put lights out, put the film on, and it started, and I was excited, and you know the beginning of Star Wars where you've got the story so far on, uh-huh, at the beginning, those words. They came up, and at the end I looked over to her, fast asleep. She'd fallen asleep before the film had even really started.
She fell asleep during the yellow storyline bit.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
But she's still never seen Star Wars.
Okay, yeah, you need to change that.
It's too late now. I wait till the kids are older.
Maybe when they're a bit older.
My wife's never seen Star Wars either. Which you know people sort of go, what, you know, like, because, you know, I'm a fan of Star Wars, and people kind of think, how on earth did you end up getting married to her if she's never seen Star Wars? It's like, well, you know, even though I'm a fan, I do realize there are some things which are more important than Star Wars.
She didn't tell you until after you got married, did she?
No, we established that very early on. So I thought, right, well, there's, you know, at least we've got stuff to do in this relationship.
Yeah, right, yeah. There's goals to work towards, and yeah.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
Star Wars and babies, and yeah.
Exactly. And when we've had children and they've left home eventually, then I'll be like, right, now I can try and get this woman to see Star Wars.
Yeah.
So, you know, it just gives us something to do, I suppose. Okay, so you mentioned trimesters there, Andy. You said that pregnant women get morning sickness in the first trimester. What are trimesters?
So it's cycles. As Ben said, it's like 12 to 13 weeks. So the first trimester is from conception for the first 13 weeks, and then after that, the morning sickness tends to end, and they tend to feel a lot better, don't they?
They feel better. That's the second trimester is where they can do stuff and function.
Yeah.
And then it goes downhill in the third trimester, which I think you're probably in now.
Probably in the third trimester.
Yeah, we're just sort of in the third trimester now. Yeah. Yeah. So
almost.
Yeah.
So how many weeks? How many weeks are you, or how many weeks is your wife?
Well, let's see. That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? That I should know the answer to.
So, when's the due date?
The due date is the 21st of December, which kind of coincides with the release of the new Star Wars film, which is very significant, of course.
So you booked tickets, yeah.
The force is strong in my family. Around the 21st of December. Is the due date? So we're looking at I guess just over 2 months, so about 8 or 9 weeks. But we've had different due dates, you know. Yeah. We've been given several due dates. So like one of them being a week earlier than that, and also we were told that it might even arrive earlier still.
The due dates don't really mean anything. I mean, were any of your kids born on their due date?
No,
neither on mine. I think. My first was born 2 weeks early and the second was born 3 weeks early. So, you know, it could be 8 weeks. It could be, I mean, you're almost in the drop zone, mate. It could be any time.
Yeah. I know. It's 8 or 9 weeks. And, you know, that's while I'm recording this. And this episode probably won't go up for a few weeks. So God knows, by the time this has actually been published, the sprog might have arrived.
this might be completely irrelevant what we're doing.
Yeah, well, no, it's all, you know, I'm appreciating the information now, and my listeners can appreciate the information later on.
Yeah, right.
I expect that many of my I know for a fact that many of my audience members have had children themselves. So I ask my listeners also if they feel like it, they could write their comments in the comments section as usual and just give their thoughts on any bits of advice and things like that. So, all right. Well, I said before, like, what should I be doing or what should I be thinking now? As the man in the relationship here, what can I do now in the third trimester?
To be honest, not a lot. You've just got to be there for your wife, really. You've got to just support her, feed her, help her put her clothes on, can't do.
You've got to do loads, basically. Yeah. You've got to do everything.
She's going to gradually get more and more immobile as the time passes and feel more and more discomfort and probably start moaning a bit about that more and more. And you just sort of have to be the person who's there to support, really. There's not a lot else you can do. You're in a bit of a helpless situation in some ways. But
And I suppose think about your social commitments as well and try and scale those back so that you're not going out too much or you've not got too many things for work, which will take you away from home sort of in and around the due date. I think I was not allowed to go abroad for work about 10 weeks before
that's quite understandable,
the baby was born,
I think.
Which was fine, you know, because I was looking at something. I almost was going to go to a conference the weekend before our due date, and I'm so pleased that I didn't, because that was the weekend. Well, the baby was actually a week old by the time that conference came around. So
yeah, okay. So I've got to
But as Ben says, just be as supportive as you possibly can.
Okay, all right. So continue to be supportive. Yeah, the only thing I'm worried about, and it's a bit of a joke, really, is whether or not I'll actually be able to get to the cinema to see Star Wars episode 8. So, but obviously I'm joking about that, and I will gladly miss that. Well, not gladly. I will miss it, of course, if it's necessary. But
yeah,
it is a big one, because once the baby's here, you won't be able to go to the cinema at all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I've been thinking. Like, so we'll come on to the what happens after the baby's arrived in a moment. So, can you tell me about the moment of childbirth? How did you know that your wife was going into labour. Can you tell us? Okay, so that's the end of part one of the conversation. What I'm going to do now is go through some of the language that you just heard but may have missed. You can hear the rest of the conversation in part two, which should be available soon. Now, a lot of the language in this list, I've got a list here of bits of language I've taken out of that conversation you just heard. A lot of the language in this list is about childbirth and parenting. But not all of this language is about those things. There's also plenty of vocab that you can use to talk about things in general. For example, there are a few football analogies that Andy and Ben used at the beginning. So check out the page for this episode where you'll see a word list that I'm going through. You can take those phrases, put them in your word lists, your flashcard apps and so on. Create your own word lists. By the way, it might be a good idea to create a word list of your own. It's so easy with the internet today. When you find new words online, let's say you're going through notes or a transcript of my podcast and you find some new phrases, you can copy and paste them into your own list, maybe on a spreadsheet or a Word document or a Google document or something. You could then add examples and definitions, pronunciation, even links to podcast episodes or anything, and also any details that will help you to remember the word, okay? Now, that's pretty easy to do. It's pretty easy to do that. Just copy, paste, and Bob's your uncle. So you could use also an online dictionary like the Oxford Dictionary Online to get examples and definitions. And then you can keep going back to your list, testing yourself and making sure that you remember these phrases and that you don't just immediately forget them. So just a tip there for how you can use word lists, notes, or scripts on my website to help expand your active vocabulary with this podcast. So let's go through the vocab list for this episode. So we were talking about becoming a dad, and someone said it's exciting and slightly nerve-wracking. Nerve-wracking is the phrase I'm looking at here. Nerves, like to be nervous, you know. If something makes you nervous or is very stressful, you can say it's nerve-wracking. Racking, spelt W-R-A-C-K-I-N-G. W-R-A-C-K-I-N-G. Nerve-wracking. Okay, it's like a very stressful experience could be described as nerve-wracking. Nice phrase. Then a few football expressions. So these football analogies came up in order to describe the sequence in which Andy and Ben had kids, as if it was a football match. You know, you have a sequence where in a football match where one team scores a goal, then another team equalizes, then the other team scores another goal and so on. So this kind of sequence. So I think Andy said, Ben, you went first with your baby. No, this is what I said. Ben, you went first with your baby and then Andy, you came next. And Andy said, yeah, I equalized. So to equalise means when in a game of football, for example, if you score a goal and the scores become equal. For example, it was 1-1 or it was 1-1, for example, like at the beginning it was 1-0. And then Andy equalised with his own baby and it became 1-1. And then Ben took the lead again. To take the lead in a game of football means you score another point and you become the one who's in the lead. So Ben took the lead again and had another baby. And then more recently, you drew level again. I said that to Andy. To draw level is exactly the same as to equalize. So to equalize, meaning to score a point so that you're equal, or to draw level, meaning again, score a point so that you're equal. And then, so they've both got two kids. And I think Ben said, we're both on a hat trick now. To be on a hat trick is when a football player has scored two goals in a game and he's ready to score another one in order to get a hat trick. So you can be on a hat trick. That's when you've got two and you're looking for a third one maybe. So he said, we're both on a hat trick now, but it's more likely that the match has been abandoned. If you abandon a match, it might be, you know, that the match has to end because of probably bad weather. If it's like frozen or something, you could say the match had to be abandoned. So he said, we're both on a hat trick, but it's more likely that the match has been abandoned now, suggesting that they don't think there will be any more babies because they've basically given up on that idea. So they're not, you know, the whole match or the whole having babies has been abandoned now. it's full time. Full time meaning the end of the game, but also full time in terms of children. No more kids. Match abandoned. We're going to call it quits. We're going to call it quits at two. If you call it quits, it means you quit, basically. A bit like just call it even. You know, in a competition or a game, you're gambling or something, and you, in the end, you decide to stop the gambling and say, let's call it quits, meaning we're just on equal terms. Bit of baby vocab here. I was saying that the scans tell us that she's healthy. So when you're pregnant, when your wife or girlfriend is pregnant, she will have to go to the hospital regularly for scans. And these are done sort of with, what is it? It's like echograph software where they use actually sound waves to get a scan of the baby. And it's amazing when it happens because you actually get to see your baby inside the womb. It's stunning, like the first sort of sights that, of the baby that you see. And that's usually quite nerve-wracking because you're worried, you know, if there's a health problem or something like that. And the doctor measures the limbs of the baby and kind of give you some information, and you're desperate for the doctor to tell you that the baby's okay, and then he or she finally does say that the baby's fine. It's a big relief, and it's quite emotional to actually see, for example, the nose of your child or the hands or feet or something. It's really bizarre. So that's the scans. And I think I said, how am I going to change a nappy? So a nappy, that's what a baby wears. You know, a baby will wear a nappy around its waist so that if it does a poo or if it does a wee-wee, that it doesn't just go everywhere. It gets caught and absorbed by the nappy. So that's a nappy. They're usually white, and you get like disposable nappies or washable nappies. Most people seem to use disposable nappies these days, which is a bit of a problem because there's lots of waste associated. In America, they call them diapers. That's right, diapers. But in the UK, nappies. I don't know who said this, but it's a nice expression. Those kinds of things are easy in hindsight. In hindsight, that means when you're looking back in time, that's in hindsight. And often when you're looking back, things seem a bit different. They might seem easier in hindsight. So it's a way of commenting on, you know, when people look at the past and they make comments about it, and you can say, well, that's very easy to say in hindsight, meaning while looking back from the present. There was a lot of apprehension around the birth. Apprehension means sort of anxiety or fear that something bad or unpleasant will happen. So if, for example, there have been suggestions in scans or something that there might be a problem with the birth, maybe because of the umbilical cord position or something, that might cause you to have a lot of apprehension, like you're scared that something bad is going to happen. The midwife. So a midwife is someone like a nurse who's qualified in helping you deliver the baby and also giving you advice before the baby is born on various things like how contractions work and what you should do on the day of the birth and other, you know, sort of health concerns and ways of looking after the baby. So that's the midwife. Also, you get a midwife when the birth takes place, and the midwife sort of helps in that process. So the midwife helps to deliver the baby and give advice on baby matters. So different types of birth. So sometimes there are problems during birth, and the doctors or midwives or, you know, the people in the hospital have to make a decision, and they might choose to do a cesarean section. A cesarean is actually where the mother is operated on, and the child is removed from the uterus without actually passing through the birth canal. So instead, let's say the mother is kind of cut open and the child is removed that way. So often that is necessary if there are issues during the birth. So I think also it may be possible in some places to choose to have a cesarean section. I expect that's a little bit controversial in some places. Don't know. It's not really controversial here. In fact, it's often done in order to save the life of the mother and the child, in fact. So cesarean section, that's the vocab there, or C-section, as it's sometimes called. A natural birth. So what does a natural birth actually mean? A natural birth, well, in the UK, a natural birth means a birth in the conventional sense. So basically not a cesarean section. That's a natural birth where the baby goes through the birth canal. But in France, we use it to mean a birth which involves no epidural, no pain reducing medication, which is, you know, injected directly into the spinal column. That's the epidural. So a natural birth in France really means one without a lot of drugs involved, a lot of medication. Whereas in the UK, it means like just not a C-section. So a C-section, cesarean section, right? An epidural, I've done that. It's a nerve blocker which goes into the spine and prevents the mother from experiencing too much pain. For example, she had an epidural and she said it was a game changer. A game changer is like a big significant change, something that completely changes things. So in this case, the epidural was a game changer. I'm not sure who this was, but she was suffering in a lot of pain. It was struggling to give birth. And then she had the epidural and that totally changed everything. It was a game changer. I'm not sure who it was who said this, maybe Ben or Andy, but someone said, we conceived on Valentine's Day. So to conceive, or conception, is the first part of the process. And this is when, I suppose, when the egg is inseminated by a sperm. And so conceiving really means the act of having sex, which leads to, you know, the pregnancy. So the moment of conception, or to conceive. So I think it's Andy and Natasha. They knew that they'd conceived on Valentine's Day because they had IVF. IVF is a form of treatment that helps you to become pregnant. It's called in vitro fertilization. So they had IVF, so they knew exactly when they conceived. I think Andy said with the second one, we were induced. If you're induced, if the woman is induced, it means that they basically, in the hospital, they use chemicals to encourage the baby to start coming out. It's a way of encouraging the, you know, dilation so that the baby can actually come out. That's to induce a birth. Someone said, my wife would certainly advocate having an epidural because it makes things so much easier. To advocate something, meaning sort of defend it or suggest that people do it. In this case, to advocate having an epidural. What about you over there in your countries? Those of you who had children, did you have an epidural? Is it possible to have an epidural in the country where you live? Is that not allowed, or is it available or not available, and why? I think in Japan, I mean, I remember speaking to a Japanese friend of mine who had a baby in Japan, and she said that it's very difficult to get an epidural in Japan, and so childbirth can be very painful. Whereas in, you know, for example, France, having an epidural is really quite standard and normal. But what about where you're from? Do hospitals give mothers an epidural? What's the sort of process like there? And is it different to the one I'm describing for you? Some people disagree with the idea of the epidural. They say that they don't want their child to be born in this kind of environment when the mother is also in a chemical induced state. So that means when you're under the effects of chemicals, and people suggest that it might make you kind of numb, like you're not really feeling things as they happen. And the birth of a child is such an important moment that you shouldn't really be numb. You should be really experiencing it and feeling it as it happened. I think that Andy said that, he said this, he said, my wife is pretty hardcore. She's hard as nails. If you're hard as nails, it means you're tough. You can take sort of physical pain. You're hardcore. You're hard as nails. And Andy said she's got no particular issues with the idea of an epidural. She's not against it. So she's got no problems with it. In fact, I said she's got no qualms about that. She's happy just to have the epidural. To have qualms, Q-U-A-L-M-S. Did you know that word? If you have qualms with something, it means you've got issues with it. You don't really agree with it. You don't want to do it. And if you've got no qualms about it, it means that you're absolutely fine with it, completely open about it. You've got no hang-ups about it at all. And in this case, my wife wouldn't mind having an epidural. In fact, she plans to have one. She's got no qualms about that. So there you go. Someone said, we tried for 3 years and never fell pregnant again. So first of all, we've got the verb to try. And just to work, the verb try on its own can mean to try to have a baby. So you often hear people saying, yeah, we've been trying for 3 months. And that means we've been trying to have a baby. We've been trying to get pregnant. And so the one here was, what is it? We tried for 3 years and never fell pregnant again. So interestingly, we say to fall pregnant, to become pregnant, but also to fall pregnant. Isn't that interesting? Like an illness. You fall sick, don't you? But also you can fall pregnant. And then in the end, we went through IVF. So that's the in vitro fertilization again. And someone said they take the eggs out and inseminate them in a test tube. So to inseminate means to, you know, it's the moment where the egg becomes fertilized. So they take the eggs out and inseminate them in a test tube and they go back in. So this is the process of IVF, that the eggs are taken out, inseminated, and then put back in again. And apparently, I think Andy and his wife were talking about this, or Andy was talking about this experience, saying that they'd had IVF, and then they went out to join some friends, and the friends were drinking champagne, and they were plying us with champagne, to ply someone with drink. P-L-Y. Yes, to ply someone with drink. And that means when you're kind of giving someone lots of drink, like probably making them a bit drunk, maybe to celebrate or what, for whatever reason, plying someone with champagne. Here you go, here's some champagne. Would you like a top up? Here's a bit more champagne. Plying us with champagne. Another nice word here on Luke's English Podcast. For some reason, I felt it necessary to give myself a little advertisement there. Another nice word on Luke's English Podcast. As we fly through this vocab list, there's only a few things left here. So I asked them, did your wives have morning sickness? Do you know what morning sickness is? That's basically when a woman is pregnant, probably in the first trimester, she feels sick, often in the morning. She might even throw up. It's really a real pain in the neck. It's horrible. Morning sickness. So I said, did your wives have morning sickness? And someone said it's the first trimester when they get sick. Trimesters. A pregnancy is divided into three trimesters. First 3 months, middle 3 months, last 3 months. First trimester, second trimester, third trimester. Okay, so in the first trimester, that's when they get sick. That's when they get the morning sickness. Second trimester, you get to see the baby bump. The bump appears, but the woman is still fairly mobile and it doesn't affect her very much. And then the third trimester is a bit trickier because that's when the bump gets much bigger and it starts to affect the woman's sort of comfort levels and things like that. So first trimester, second trimester, third trimester. Apparently, who was it? Ben's wife, I think. She was narcoleptic. If you're narcoleptic, it means that you can't stop sleeping. You're sleeping all the time. So she was always sleeping. Narcoleptic. He said her body was generating new cells and it took it out of her. If something takes it out of you, it means it takes the energy out of you. It makes you tired. It really took it out of me. Her body was generating new cells and it took it out of her. So let's see, what else have we got? Due date, you know that one. That's a typical one that you always have to know when you're talking to a pregnant person or someone who's married to a pregnant person or something. The due date. What's the due date? D-U-E date. What's the due date? Or do you know when it's due? Just one of the typical questions you ask, meaning when's the baby going to arrive? When's the due date? And I said, oh, you know, mine's in sort of in December. And Andy said, oh, you're almost in the drop zone. The drop zone, I imagine, would be something that the Air Force would use. Imagine a bomber flying over some kind of landscape and then an area where they're going to bomb. That's the drop zone. That's where they drop the bombs. So it's quite funny because in a similar way, I'm close to the drop zone, meaning the date where the sprog is going to drop. A sprog, by the way, is just like a slightly pejorative word for a child. It's a kind of jokey way of saying a child. So yeah, I'm almost in the drop zone, almost in the area when the baby's going to be born. And I said, by the time this has been published, the sprog might even have arrived. There's the word sprog again, meaning child. And I think Andy said to me, think about your social commitments and try to scale them back. So if you scale something back, it basically means you remove it, you take it back, or you scale something down, meaning the size and extent of it gets taken back, meaning you sort of cancel a lot of social engagements and things. Okay. Wow. That was a big epidural shot of vocabulary right into your spinal column, right into the central nervous system. I wonder how much of that you're going to remember. All of it, of course. Don't forget to visit the page on this episode, page on the website for this episode, where you'll find all of that language provided for you free of charge so that you can use it, expand your vocabulary, and then just become an even greater person than you already are. And you're already pretty great, aren't you? Yes, you are. Thanks for listening thus far. Part two should be available very soon. But for now, it's time to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.